Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we have a really interesting piece coming up now. Rites of passage is huge in many, many communities, or was huge in many communities. And many communities are trying to reclaim that as a way to create continuity, to create the bridge between childhood and adulthood, to figure out what it means to be a man or a woman. Within the traditions of a community, it could be a multi-ethnic community, could be the Black community, could be the Jewish community, could be the Native American communities, Arab communities, anybody's community. But these rites of passage are things we've lost in this modern capitalist world, and there are people who are struggling and working in very positive ways to bring that back. And there's a rites of passage conference coming here to Baltimore, one of the people doing that is somebody who's been on the show many times, not enough, but several times, and needs to be here more. As Navasha Dea, who, of course, is a lead vocalist, songwriter, and co-founder of that incredible group, Fertile Ground. She's talked about before as descended from a lineage of women who assist and teach women and community. And along with her husband, who's education musician, organizer, Fanon Hill, and youth mentees, Rashard Williams and Shadia Allen, co-founded the Youth Resiliency Institute. And she's here in the studio with us. It's always a pleasure to have you back.
Oh, thank you so much.
And she's brought with her Paul Hill. Paul Hill is, I've been dying to meet him. He's here in the studio now. He's a social worker, researcher, practitioner of rites of passage for over 30 years. And out of his group, Youth and Family Services, he created the National Rites of Passage Institute. He got a Kellogg grant, as I understood, we'll talk about, traveled over 200,000 miles to study rites of passage and cultures around the globe to bring that home. His first book is Coming of Age. And he recently wrote Rites of Passage, Birth, Initiation, Marriage, Death, which is a chapter in African Presence in Black America by Jacob Gordon. As one of our leaders and elders, welcome to the station. Good to have you with us.
It's an honor and pleasure being here with you, Mark.
And we're also meeting Rashard Williams. Rashard Williams from Baltimore City. He's co-founder and lead youth culture organizer of the Youth Resiliency Institute. And under the guidance of YRI, co-founder Fanon Hill, at age 16, Rashard organized hundreds of community-based actions throughout the cities in our divested communities, but communities that people have forgotten about or our society has forgotten about. And as a young Black man who was touched by the juvenile justice system, as so many have, Rashard understood what he wanted to give back and has. And Rashard, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
A pleasure to be here today.
All right, so welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Start off, Navasha, about the conference coming up.
Yes.
And then we'll jump into the heart and the meat of what you all are doing.
Well, we're having a youth and community building conference, a rites of passage conference here in Baltimore at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum, July 19th through the 21st. And we're so excited to be here, you know, to have this conference here. Paul Hill, the director and founder of the National Rites of Passage Institute, decided to have the conference here in Baltimore, Maryland. We're so happy to welcome him here.
That's we have plenty of time to talk about this between now and July and get people involved.
Yes, that's true. Thank you.
We can call this first the beginning of a number of conversations.
Yes.
And Paul, welcome. It's good to have you
here. Yes, good being in Baltimore. Always a pleasure.
Good to have you here. You live where?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Well, East Cleveland, Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Cleveland connections all around here, right?
Yes.
So, we were talking before you came in here just about the power of rites of passage. Before we get to that, talk a bit about your work. I mean, I'm very curious about what pushed you into this world of rites of passage and a little bit about what you learned, what you did on this 200,000 miles of travel around the world to see what other people are doing in their cultures.
Well, rites of passage as a passion and motivation, you know, is really grounded in my experience as a father, a father of seven children, five girls, two boys.
Wow.
And what is it that I could do to help them to be socialized into manhood and womanhood? And then out of that, those experiences, you know, working first with my sons, we formed a organization called Simba Wachanga, which is Kiswahili for young lions, to help develop a sense of identity, individual identity, as well as a group identity. And then develop, a similar rites of passage, parallel rites of passage program for my daughter and their friends and the young ladies called Malaika. And
Which means what?
Malaika means queen in Swahili.
Right.
And Navasha, you know, during those early days of her development and growing up in East Cleveland, Ohio, was a member of the Malaika network. So it was really called the Simba in Maleka Network. So it really got started through my, you know, my children, you know, the friend, their friends, young people in the community. Then I expanded it to my work, being a social worker and being head of a youth and family services organization, you know, looking for a means of helping to regenerate the community, to develop productive adults and young people, especially in the area of manhood development and womanhood development. So looking at rites of passage, which has been something that we reinvented because it's been around forever. It wasn't even called rites of passage till
since the beginning of human society. It's been
human
with it,
society,
right?
But the term rites of passage really came about in by a Belgian anthropologist Arnold Genet in 1907 in his book, which was written in French, "Le Rites of Passage," based on his research and studies throughout the continent of Africa, looking at people and cultures, and on the continent the way that they help socialize and develop their children into adults in manhood and womanhood.
And Richard, your own story. I mean, you the way I introduced you and what I've learned a little bit about you is that clearly where you came from in terms of when you were a younger man,
yes.
that there were no rites of passage.
Well, growing up in East Baltimore, where I was raised, it wasn't much a big thing about rites of passage coming up in the streets of East Baltimore. It was more of learning on your own and find out the hard way, or you don't find out at all until it's too late. And I've been working with Fanon for years now, and working with him and also Elder Hill and also Navasha, working with them and them speaking to me about rites of passage and me learning my own understanding as a becoming of a man. I turned 21. And basically going through the transformation from working with Fanon from when I was 16 to turning 20 now, and going into the community and trying to give back and show the youth today of what rites of passage is actually about.
So, and how did that work for you? What were the rites of passage for you? What happened?
Well, as far as the rites of passage for me, I dropped out of school, and I was working towards getting my GED, and things got tough, and things got hard, and I would say that I was kind of putting things off in a way because I wasn't ready for that transformation. But then getting involved in the community and giving back showed me that not only could I help myself, but I could help others and show others the way of rites of passage through developing themselves and their mental abilities to show that they could achieve whatever they put their mind to, as long as we come together.
I want to, Paul, we hear a lot about rites of passage, and I hear a lot of people who... let me just start this way. A lot of people who come out of the African-American community in this country talk about the importance of it. I mean, it's the theme that travels around the country. People kind of want to wrestle and bring it back or even recreate it. So talk about that history. I mean, what is it that was lost? How was it lost? How does it get reclaimed or even born?
Well, it really has a lot to do with our experiences, which is a very unique experience when compared to other ethnic groups. The way we were brought to this country as unwilling immigrants. And we had forms of socialization, which we now call rites of passage, for regenerating the community and for development into manhood and womanhood that was part of our tradition and cultures, you know, on the continent of Africa. You know, specifically, you know, I'm talking relative to the model that we use really comes out of West Africa. But it's a blend of what took place in West Africa versus East Africa. But a lot of those things were lost. We weren't able to practice them the way that we were divided up, the way that we were separated from one another. So there's been this emphasis on how do we reclaim what we had, you know, that helped us to sustain and maintain ourselves for thousands of years as healthy groups of, you know, people on the continent of Africa. So it's really a reinvention and a reclaiming of those things that work for our ancestors, some that are still retained through cultural continuity, African retention, in ways that we culturally do things, but we're not aware of it, you know, because of the, you know, the African-American experience and racism and oppression, et cetera, et cetera. So rites of passage is a means, and it's really a cultural development means, you know, with what I call a rites of passage framework, which is incorporated within it, and that framework is based on it being value-focused, and a lot of the rites of passage programs, process that exists, used in Guzu Saba that comes out of the tradition of Kwanzaa, as far as values that drive us to be more productive and to be better individuals and family and community members. Also, it's African-centered. And African-centered is nothing but, you know, putting ourselves in the center, making decisions that are in our best interest as individuals and as a family and group. So being African-centered, putting ourselves in the center. Third would be, nature-based. You know, everything mm-hmm. there is to know is in nature if you know what to look for and what questions to ask, but using nature as the primary teacher. So a lot of the bonding and separation that we do is in a nature environment. And then finally, the incorporation of rituals and ceremonies. Rituals, because, you know, we're a society, rituals are, and ceremony is all around us relative to, in a negative sense, you know, going to court, you know, being stripped of who you are as an individual and, you know, the judge standing before you, the ritual of the judicial system, the court system, to go through that process. It's a shame there's not, you know, once individuals have been rehabilitated, they come back in the community, there's a similar type of ceremony to reintegrate them back into the community, saying that they have been rehabilitated, that will help them as far as, their development and feeling good about themselves and what they've been able to accomplish. So all those things being very important as far as having a formalized process that we take, not only young people, but people in all seasons of life. Usually when we talk about rights, we just think adolescence, right?
Right.
Rites of passage.
Right.
But, you know, myself, you know, I'm closer to 70 than I am to 60.
Amen to that.
But the transition, in the season of, the fall of life and going into becoming a junior elder or eldership itself. So there are various seasons of life where we need this pat on the back. We need the recognition of the milestone that we're at. And this recognition coming from the family/community.
And Avash, I'm very curious, is this your own experience? I mean, I know you came from mm-hmm. a family that was very politically, culturally, and socially progressive, form of a better term. They were
mm-hmm. yes.
conscious and evolved and involved,
yes.
right? So, but what was this rite of, if you could just describe for people listening, what were these rites of passage, what they meant for you, what it meant to be Malaika mm-hmm. in that ceremony? What was it like? What was the transformational aspect of it?
It was really nice. I mean, knowing who you are, knowing where you come from, knowing your ancestors, bonding with other young ladies that are going to have or at least being introduced to the same values. A lot of mystery involved. You don't know what's going to happen. You know, blindfolded sometimes, things like that. having these wonderful new elder women who were looking after you. And my mother was involved in facilitating, but she wasn't my, person with me. But having other ladies in the community claim me and adopt me to continue my journey as a young lady. Discipline. And listening for long times to elders. I had a lot of training in that as a young child. And in that process, I mean, it's ever going, it's ever flowing. And I'm very blessed to have parents in a community that I come from to help continue the cultivation of that consciousness. But it definitely shifted things for me in regards to the value of understanding who I am as a young woman, what is expected of me in the future, and like a claiming of me declaring that I will take responsibility to be a certain type of woman and be appreciative of what I received from them.
Because I know that when we've talked before, I mean, you have when you talk about your own heritage, mm-hmm. you embrace obviously the African heritage.
Mm-hmm.
You also embrace your native heritage.
Mm-hmm. And honorable European.
Right. As you put it.
Non-slave masters. Yes.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, so all that becomes part of who you are.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. And that's the evolution that, for me as I became an adult as well.
So when we think about America mm-hmm. and we think about people reclaiming their Africanness
mm-hmm.
in many ways, and the African-centered traditions that you were talking about, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
How does that, play into the complexity of 400 years of living in America, living here? How does that do they?
Well, what we have to understand is that in order to read a book, you have to start at the beginning, not in the
right.
middle.
Exactly.
And our African-American experience is an episode or chapter within that book. It's an important chapter. But there's more to us than just you know, the African-American experience. There's also the thousands of years of African experience. So it's really important. You know, my grandmother always said, and probably a lot of other grandmothers have said, is, you know, where you start determines where you end. So if you start with just talking about slavery or enslavement, I mean, there's more to us. There's a lot more to us, you know, than right. that. So, you have to start at the beginning relative to personal development and group development. You know, one of the things that's good about being bringing this conference to Baltimore has to do with just the, you know, the African-American and African history relative to Baltimore and enslavement, enslavement itself. You know, Harriet Tubman is her 100th anniversary, and coming from Eastern Shores, Frederick Douglass, you know, coming from the Eastern Shores, and thinking about the Eastern Shores with the African continuity and African retention relative to the culture, the food, the music, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, thinking about Baltimore during the 90s when we really had our heyday for African-American rites of passage. We had national conferences, and our fifth national conference that was held in 1991 was right here in Baltimore at Sir John Truth College University, and we were at the Wax Museum. Individuals such as the late one of the pioneers for rites of passage in this area, Baba Daryl Kennan, you know, being from Baltimore. So there's a, you know, there's a lot of history and foundation here in Baltimore, and that's one of the reasons why we wanted to be here in 2013 for remembrance, you know, for a reunion, for a celebration, and for talking about practice.
So, and Rashard, I'm very, very curious about your interaction with your peers and with those younger than you, because that's a huge disconnect between off on the street and the street corner. And, I mean, everybody has the images they were given in school, and people know the name of Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass, Martin Luther King. They know these names. They hear phrases like, you're kings and queens of Africa, those things come through. But oftentimes those are like names. They're just like symbols. So I'm curious, when you get down to the heart of it, to the soul of it, I mean, what's the interaction like when you bring this to your peers?
When I'm down and I'm working in the communities all around Baltimore City, I mean, I just explain it to them how I learned it, that the rites of passage is something that everybody goes through. Whether somebody told it to you or not, it's an experience that you're going to go through as a transformation from a young male to an actual adult. And some people go through that transformation in the wrong way. Some people go through that transformation due to the juvenile system or due to incarceration. Some people go through actually working through the communities, and I try to show people the positive way by actually me being from Baltimore, showing them that it is possible and it can be done and we can come together and we can accomplish this rites of passage in a positive way instead of the negative way that is getting pursued and looked at as of in Baltimore. And a lot of these people don't get to hear a young male come and speak to them. They hear from elders or they hear from somebody older, but it's better to hear from somebody when you're actually there with them. And you can say, I've been through this, and I can show you the right way. I can tell you the right way, and you cannot follow it. Or I can show you this and bring you out in the community, and you show the joy that you bring yourself and your people.
So how do you implement it? How do you inculcate it? What happens? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's people talk about rites of passage. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about 41 on the air, Paul. You know how the different communities, like the in certain Native American communities, they're reclaiming the rites of passage for young people and for elders, and it's really taking hold in many places. Jewish communities have had rites of passage at different levels as well, even though some of them have gotten kind of skewered by our material society, but they're still there.
Right.
So what does it mean to implement what? How does that happen? What do you do?
You know, I look at my 30 years of running my 104-year-old youth and family services organization. It came out of the Sullivan House movement, and it being a multi-services center serving the very young and the very old. So the way that I put in practice, the development, you know, the adult development, youth development, child development, you know, through a rites of passage framework, had to do with just the intergenerational activities between the children and the older people, you know, within you're within my neighborhood center. You know, they say once you lose a senior, you lose a library. So, you know, right. You know, storytelling, you know, folk tales. A lot of times young people, you know, when they think of an elder, they usually think today about somebody 30 or 40. They don't think about an elder in the sense that we do, you know, 70s and 80s. But just coming in contact with those that have, you know, lived healthy, good, you know, good lives. So the intergenerational piece, you know, being very important. Also the nature piece, you know, involving them, taking them out to the city. You know, in Cleveland we have a historical African-American camp. There were only five in the United States, and we have one in the greater Cleveland area, the Phyllis Wheatley Association. But taking them out in the nature, you know, going through a separation and bonding process, you know, which is very important. You know, a lot of individuals, even though they live next to one another, they really don't know one another, you know. So separating and bonding them into giving them a sense of community and feeling good about one another, emphasizing the importance of relationships, you know, having different ordeals and challenges, trust falls, but different activities to help them bond as a group to feel good about themselves once they leave that experience and they go back home, that they will be in contact with one another. You know, the intervention itself, you know, the different ordeals that they have to go through, challenges that they have to go through, some are public, you know, some are secret relative to something as simple as a name. You know, what does your name mean? What is the history of your name? You know, genealogy, you know, developing a family tree, some things that a lot of people take for granted. But just being able to answer the question, who am I? A lot of us don't know who we are. You know, we're defined by popular culture, but from a historical ethnic perspective, that's been lacking. So, you know, answering the question, you know, who am I? You know and live one's history and practice one's culture. Am I really who I am? Employ a cultural criteria of authenticity, i.e. criteria of what is real and unreal, what is appearance and essence, what is the culturally rooted, what is culturally rooted, you know, and foreign. Am I all I ought to be? You know, self-consciously possess and use ethical and cultural standards which measure women, men, and children in terms of the quality of their thought practice in the context of who they are and must become as descendants of African men and women, but having different activities and experiences, something as simple as journaling. You know, it's one thing thinking something. It's another thing when you write it down, certain experiences that you have, using, you know, the fire, a fireplace, debriefing around the fire as a result of certain experiences that you have. But, you know, just that bonding and coming together as a group. All those things, when you put them together, those things that our ancestors understood, we take for granted. We have no memory of it. Bringing those things back, that cultural learn, those cultural learning experiences.
So I'm curious that there's one thing. We have about 5 or 6 minutes left here, and I'm curious what you learned, Paul. Let me turn back here. Where you traveled, mm-hmm. because you have a people in America, African Americans in America, is an amalgam of many cultures, many nations that ended up here.
Right.
And so mostly from West Africa, mm-hmm. all throughout West Africa, though we use Swahili, which is East African,
right.
and Arabic,
exactly.
often as a language of unity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'm curious what you learn in that process and how that gets married into this National Rites of Passage.
You know, a good way to reflect, you know, the synthesis of those experiences would be, and I have to give, you know, Dr. Milana Karanga credit, you know, for Kwanzaa. You know, Kwanzaa, which is a synthesis of our African experience, you know, Western and some Eastern that's in there, using Swahili, which is more of an Eastern Bantu, you know, Arabic creolization language. But, you know, putting all of those things together, to again put an emphasis on culture. Culture is the glue that kind of holds us together. You get so far out there, culture is like a rubber band that pulls you back in. But again, it's a synthesis of the culture that is reflected in Kwanzaa. And it's coming together at the end of the year to give thanks for coming through the year based on harvest festivals, be it East Africa, West Africa, and to prepare for the new year. So to me, the essence of and one of the groundings of rites of passage, the way it has been practiced, would be through you know, the essence and the moorings that have been established and come out of the whole Kwanzaa Harvest Festival tradition, because it captures the best of who we were, you know, on the continent. And I like to end like this. I never forget being at Kent State University maybe about 20 years ago. And, you know, Richard Leakey was there. And, you know, the audience was predominantly European-American. There was a few African-Americans of us that were there. And one of the questions that he asked the audience, you know, what is one thing that Africa has contributed to the world that we could not do without? And most folks couldn't answer it. But he said, what has contributed to the world is who we are as Homo sapiens sapiens or human beings. The first person that ever lived was African. People that are alive today are African. Anybody that's alive in the future will be African. So we all come from, you know, the same source. You know, we kind of get, you know, for political reasons and social construct reasons, get, you know, the whole divisiveness of just color, you know, melanin and the differences. But we're more alike, you know, than we are different. So it's in order for us to feel good as African-Americans and to be accepting of other people, we have to have a sense, a good sense of knowing who we are, where we've come from, that personal identity, that group identity, to be accepting of others. And others that we may reflect, you know, being of Native American ancestry, being part of us, European American ancestry. But usually that African ancestry is what sets us apart and which is stigmatized even in the 21st century that we live in today that most of us do not have that much knowledge of.
And Navasha, before we have to roll here, the conference itself, tell us more about what's going to happen there and how to be in touch. And
well, it's going to be it's a youth and community building conference. So it'll be a lot of youth presentations, intergenerational conversations and workshops, furthering for those who are practicing rites of passage and youth development to learn more and to come together as Mr. Paul Hill said, you know, to celebrate and come together. It's going to be July 19th to 21st at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland, African American History and Culture. And you can find more about it at www.nropi.org. www.nropi.org. And I'm sure it'll be on your website as well. So it's going to
will be.
Yes, yes. It's going to be really exciting. It's going to be a lot of good. It's going to be, you know, incorporating all the aspects of community.
We'll only put in the website if we promise we'll come back and do more of this between now and July and kind of really get into the heart of it and get a chance to read Paul Hill's book and get you back to talk about that, the intensity of it, so we can get a more in-depth through it all.
That'd
okay,
be great.
Thank you, Mark.
It's been an
appreciate
honor to have you here. Paul Hill, Navasha Dea, Rashard Williams, thank you all so much for
being here.
Thank you.